Hi there, and greetings to everyone seeking and hoping to find the true meaning of life, those sick and tired of this poisonous world whose soul and spirit are bleeding, and of the emptiness and futility of this materialistic civilization. Welcome to our radio show, The Way, The Truth, The Life. Welcome to our world of supreme love and immortality, where all human hopes are fulfilled. Welcome to the world of Orthodox Christian spirituality, a world now unknown to the West, which once had the key, but lost it a long time ago, the key that has an answer to every question. My name is monk Arsenije Jovanović. I live in the monastery of Ostrog, Montenegro. It is never too easy to talk on spiritual issues, especially when it has to be in foreign language, which is English to me. I apologize in advance for possible mistakes. However, I believe God will help me to say the word and you to understand it. So, let us embark on our waves. My dear brothers and sisters, wherever you are and whoever you are who are listening to this story of my life and who have energy and will to listen to me, although you have many other much important things to do. And I say, brothers and sisters, to you who are Orthodox Christians and to you who are not, and to you who are not Christians at all, who may listen to this somewhere in the world. And of course, we are all brothers and sisters, because one creator of the universe and one creator of the humankind created us all from one bone and one flesh and one blood and one soul, human, godlike soul. And wherever we are and to ever religion do we belong, we cannot escape the fact that we are all brothers and sisters and that we have all one Heavenly Father. Some of those religions are more like a philosophies, and some of them do not admit and do not accept the fact that a creator exists. Some of them are, as they say in philosophy, nihilistic religious. They say there is no living God as a person, as a personality, conscious of his being and conscious of ourselves. That this universe is there, it was always there, and it will be there, changing just its forms, being destroyed and recovered again, and destroyed and recovered, and that there is no exit from it except by extinguishing in ourselves our consciousness, slowly switching off our being and escaping from this never-ending wheel of suffering, which is called life. But this is a great delusion, because trying to escape into non-being, we will never manage it. Because we cannot go back to non-being. Because once, long time in the past, the Creator brought us from non-being into being. And as this was His will and not ours, and we couldn't do anything about it, we also cannot go back out of our own will. And concerning His will, He also doesn't want to bring us back to non-being, since He made us to be immortal and to be eternal. And to be eternal means to be aware of ourselves and to continue to exist in eternity, because our soul, our being, our spirit is immortal. And not only our soul and our being, but our consciousness, our personality, is immortal, which means that we are not going to dissolve as a drop of rain in some immense ocean, and this way to disappear as a unique personality and being, but on the contrary, we are going to continue our existence in ages and ages. But there is a great question how it will be, whether it will be in the realm of light or in the realm of darkness. Of course, to somebody, this story is just going to sound as a fairy tale. But there are people who, through great sacrifice and struggle on a spiritual level, through very concrete and special spiritual practice called Orthodox Christian Ascetical Life, managed to be transported to another spiritual realm and to face another mode of being, of existence, and they have understood that this is immortality which awaits us. But there is only a great question: how are we going to prepare ourselves for this other existence? And some bits of this immense truth was given to me as well to understand and to grasp and to taste and to feel in very deep prayers that I had in my life. And not always, and not very often, but to the contrary, very seldom, maybe several times in the last 25 years. But those moments were crucial for my life and for understanding the whole universe and the life in its origin. So this way, those spiritual giants in far past and in closer past told us,
they conveyed to us
their experience, and they have written books to inform us people today in 21st century, there is another world, maybe much more real than this one, and it is of immense importance to be aware of it and to prepare for it, because it is much, much more important for us than just mere survival in this life. So being aware of all of this, mostly through reading of Holy Fathers and a little bit of my own experience, I set on this way of my life, which is called monasticism, being inflamed with immense desire to go deep into it, deeper and deeper, as much as it is given to human being and to myself particularly. So finally, I arrived at the monastery of Visoki Dečani, and the first person who I encountered over there was a deacon, higher deacon, Justin. Although, if I remember better, at that time he was still novice, called Milan. Later on, he is going to become monk Justin, and then deacon, which means the one who serves by the altar table to the priest. He greeted me very warmly and told me immediately, come up into our building, main dormitory building, where there are offices and refectory. And he said, you must be hungry from the trip, because he didn't really know where I'm coming from, and I was all dusty and wrinkled. My robes were this way from that great jam in the bus. And I said, yeah, that would be good if I can have something to eat. So he gave me maybe the most sweet tomato that I ever ate in my life. It was big, red, smelling beautiful. And besides that, he gave me a piece of homemade bread, also smelling beautifully, and a piece of homemade cheese. So I will always remember that small meal that I had. Maybe something the sweetest and the most tasteful that I ever had in my life. Right now, I don't know how it was, but maybe it was this first grace that I encountered in the monastery of Tol Dečani. So then he introduced me to Abbot Theodosia and his deputy, Father Sava. I understood that the whole brotherhood is pretty young. The very abbot was 3 years younger than me, and Father Sava, who is the second in rank in the monastery, was even younger. He was younger than me, let's say about 6 or 7 years. And in the meantime, I saw a few other brothers and realized that they're also mostly young people. But somehow I felt that they're so mature. You could see that on their faces. especially in the face of Abbot Theodosia. He was younger than me, but he looked older, not because he was, let's say, leading hard life, so you could see that on his face, but this maturity and seriousness, you could feel and see in his eyes. And I was so delighted to see this, because I was always looking for people who are serious, who are resolute in their decision to live righteously, to follow God's commandments, and preparing their lives and their souls for this meeting face to face with the living creator of the universe. So I told them, in short, who I am, where I'm coming from, without too many details, of course, and they were very nice and polite and very warm. All of them were very warm. This was something that's very specific, very welcoming. And it was really nice to me, since I was coming from United States, and those were early 90s. And those little older among us know that those days, those years, were years of terrible bloody war in previous Yugoslavia. And the whole thing about Serbs in the world was very bad, because Serbs were characterized as guilty ones for everything, that they are savage, primitive, dangerous, and everything bad people, and that everybody should look at them this way and treat them this way. So after several years in the United States, in New York City, under this pressure, I felt so nice here, finally, among my people, and with such a warmness and acceptance. So I told them that actually I definitely want to stay in Kosovo as a future monk, but that I still do not know in which monastery. And since I heard that Bishop Artemije will arrive next day from Belgrade into the monastery, that I would be very glad if I can meet him and talk to him. So, believing that from this conversation I will find out what does he think about me, and what does he think, where should I settle finally. And of course Father Abbott and Father Sava, they told me that I'm very welcome. So they showed me a room. It was a pretty big guest room with about 8 beds. Everything was nice and clean. And they told me that they don't have one bed rooms, since this brotherhood came from another monastery recently, in the monastery of Visoki Dečani, and the buildings are still very old and in bad condition. So they are planning to do a lot of restorations and construction work, because they were there just a year and a half. Before them, there was an old brotherhood. Out of 5 of them, they were older monks. And when Bishop Artemije became bishop, before that he was abbot of monastery of Black River, Crna Reka. When he became bishop, he decided to take one part of the big brotherhood that gathered in the meantime around him in the monastery of Crna Reka, and he sent them to the monastery of Visoki Dečani, and the old brotherhood he sent away in the other monasteries and in the other regions of our country and our Serbian church. So they were just fresh newcomers in this monastery, and it was still very old, and many rooms were out of order and out of everything that is important for normal life. But of course I was absolutely satisfied with this big room. There were, I think, 3 more novices, nice young boys, and that's actually how it happened for me to arrive in the monastery. After not that long time, there was a sign for Vespers, evening service. They were hitting into the wooden plank, specially carved for this purpose, in Greek called semantron, which is usually used in the monasteries for some church services. Main church services are mainly signaled, of course, with church bells from the bell tower. But Vesper service and some other services were signalized by hitting in this wooden plank. called Semantram. It was very nice, pleasant sound, similar like on Mount Athos, because later on I have seen that the typikon, the way of life, the cyclus of life in the monastery was actually taken from the Mount Athos, which is, of course, absolutely normal and natural, because Mount Athos is a capital for monasticism, for Orthodox monasticism. And I will always remember that first Vesper service in monastery of Dol Dechany. I think Father Abbott was serving, and for the clerus, for the right clerus, place in the Orthodox churches where is a book stand. There is a wooden stand that holds service books with text and with music notes. So there were Father Sava and Brother Milan, future monk Justin, or Justin, how we say in Serbia, and they were singing. And they were both very, very talented and gifted and good chanters, church singers. They sung in two voices, in first and second voice, tenor and baritone. And they sang so beautifully, so inspiring, so touching, so in a, such a spiritual feeling that I thought, oh my God, where I am. I didn't even remember on Mount Athos such a beautiful singing. Later on, I would realize and I would understand that Father Sao was an extremely good singer, and his father was a very gifted singer. And Father Sao's brother was one of the best Byzantine chanters. So it was genetical. And on the other hand, Brother Milan was also extremely talented singer. So it was like, I don't know, like a professional concert only in the monastery, and they were singing just out of love for the Lord, not for money, not in front of some audience in some concert hall. And it was so beautiful. And I said, oh my Lord, this is the life for me. This life is really for me and no other way of life. Please help me continue. Please help me to have enough strength not to stray away, not to escape, not to go back, but to stay and to become a monk. And please give me, please allow me, Lord, to learn to sing, because I always loved music. So I thought in my pride that maybe I could be a singer one day. After that we had a supper, which was very simple, but enough of food for everybody. And then we withdrew to ourselves. I went up on the first floor where my room was, and there were those three novices already, and they were reading the evening prayers, which we read before going to sleep. Everything was so peaceful, everything was so nice, full of very decent and polite relationship among everybody. They all appreciated your personality, and it was so beautiful, like I was not in the real world. And I thought, it is just whether I am imagining it or it is for real. And finally, we went into our beds, since we were supposed to wake up early to finish our private morning prayers and then to go to the church. The morning service was starting at 5 o'clock in the morning, and we were supposed to wake up, let's say, about an hour before that, so about 4 o'clock in the morning. I slept so good, so light, so released of every worry, of every dilemma, of every problem. There was no fear, there was no pain, there was no any kind of tension that I had in past several years. And I said, this is it. This is the life that fits me. And I will do everything to continue and to live this way until my death. So tomorrow it was a new day. The church service was very nice. Liturgy, everything was going smoothly, without problems, without obstacles. Sometimes when monks are young, they don't know how to perform well the service, because our church services are not that easy. Sometimes they are very complicated, and sometimes it's not easy to do it smoothly, continuously. Sometimes we don't know where should we start, where should we stop, how to hit the tone, because there are 8 tones of 8 melodies of those church hymns that we are using. And actually it is necessary to work on it seriously for several years to grasp all those details, and especially the melodies. Some monks never can learn those melodies because they don't have that gift, and they're doing other things, reading and just, of course, being present in the church and praying. But those who have this gift, they're obliged to work on it, to develop it, and to be one of the chanters in the church. So after the liturgy, if I remember well, I have taken communion for the first time in Serbia after many, many years, because last communion was when I was, I think, maybe 5 years old or 6 years old. And it gave me another bit of taste of eternity and taste of God's love. And the joy was really great in my heart. But unfortunately, to my disappointment, Father Abbott, after the breakfast, told me that he was just informed from Belgrade that Bishop Artemije is not going to come for about several days more, because he was kept there by some business, church business, so he's not able to come at least in about 5 next days. So it really kind of changed my plans, because I didn't know what to do now. So in the meantime, Father Abbott told me, you can stay with us and you can just enter our life, you can participate in our daily duties, or you can go and visit some other monasteries. So I have decided to stay in the monastery and to wait for the bishop, and then, with his advice, to go and maybe visit some few other monasteries that were existing in his area of his charge, when he was in charge. I think in English it is called bishopric, eparchy. So in this eparchy, at that time, there were only 3 men's monasteries, and let's say about maybe 4 or 5 convents, women's monasteries. So the weather was nice, it was September, summer was still on, and it was time for picking the apples. And we went to the orchard, and the orchard was beautiful, the old one, big apple trees, already very old, but full of fruit. So there were special tools for picking up the apples, because the apples should be picked with a special stick, with a little net, with a little net made out of metal ring, and we were supposed to pick each apple separately, because if apple falls down and hits on the ground, it decays on that part and it cannot be saved and preserved in the storage, in the food storage. So we were working about it, and I have seen that nobody is actually eating apples. So I didn't know why is that. Later on, I have realized that the monk is not allowed to eat or to drink without a blessing. Of course, he is going to receive the blessing, but without blessing, he is not allowed, because he is performing his will. And the life of a monk is actually cutting off his own will, of course, in the first years of monasticism. Because in the first years, we are inexperienced, we are very passionate, and if we listen to our desires, we can do many crazy things, as we used to do in our civilian life. So this is the way of living in the monastery. You ask for everything, and mostly you receive the blessing, but sometimes you don't, because it's not good for you. And about this, the elders are judging, and they're bringing up their decisions about it. So I didn't know why they don't eat the apples, because they were so many apples all around, on the ground and on the trees, and they were so beautiful, nice, green-red, smelling beautifully, not like those apples in New York grocery stores, just looking nice, big, but without taste and without any nice fragrance. And being non-experienced in these matters, I took one from the ground, and when I had a few minutes for rest, I ate one, and it was absolutely delicious, sweet and aromatic. And after that, for about 15 days, I would have a good lesson what disobedience does really mean. Because I was disobedient, I didn't ask, may I take one apple and eat? So what happened? Being for 6 years on another continent, I lost my natural immunity for this local germs. And on the other hand, it was out of disobedience. So I got such a bad diarrhea that I thought that I'm going to leak out all the liquid that I have in my organism. So it was really terrible. But that's how I learned my lesson about monastic life and about asking for everything. So this dame came about 5 days after my arrival. And Father Abu told me, "Brother Alexander, the bishop is in Prizren. He arrived at his residence. So if you want myself and Father Sava, we have to go there and talk about some monastery business with bishop. And if you want, and I believe you do want, come with us and you can talk with the bishop and then you can decide about your further future in our eparchy." So I was delighted and I said, "Definitely, yes." So we went there. Father Abbot was driving. Father Sava was not driver. It was, a rabbit Volkswagen. Finally, we arrived at Prizren and went to Bishop's residence.
Roko reči.
Welcome to our radio show, The Way, The Truth, The Life.
And very soon he received us. So I didn't know what to expect, because when you talk about monks and experienced spiritual persons, you imagine tall, thin, long beard, quiet personality. But this was something different. When we entered his office, which was in the same time his office and his living room, some kind of room for receiving those who want to talk with Bishop, it was very nice furnished, but nothing superfluous, nothing more than it was necessary. Everything was nice and clean and with a lot of icons on the walls. And there was on the couch sitting a very short older man, monk of course, but bishop, with a white beard, not completely white. He was not that old at the time. He was, I think, about close to 60. And he was not that thin at all. He was kind of, not fat, but you could see that something is wrong with his liquid metabolism. And but his face was actually the most important part of his personality, which was very nice, warm, and with nice eyes who were looking directly to your eyes, but without some kind of stern look, but with nice look. And so I took a blessing, I kissed his hand, and he said, "Please, Brother Alexander, sit here and let's talk about." So again, I repeated story of my life in short, telling him that I was born in Belgrade, 1960, that there I finished my schooling, my university, that actually, I was a dentist and the artist at the same time. Then I went to the United States, living in New York City for about close to 5 years. Then I went to Monastery of St. Ikon of Zadonsk as a novice. Spent some short period of time on Mount Athos, and here I am, almost sure that I want to stay in his eparchy. But I just want to talk with him and to ask him where it would be the best place for me, because I told him that, and I was always thinking about some smaller monastery with a small number of monks, something which more looks like a hermitage, not like a big cenobitic monastery. And he told me, "Very well, Brother Alexander, you can visit a few more monasteries in my eparchy, and then you can decide. And of course, stay here," and as he told me, in a specific church monastic manner, "stay with us and work on your salvation together with us." It sounded so nice to me, and I have found myself among people with the same way of thinking, with same life goal. And I said, Bishop, as we say, Vladika, which means the one who rules, but in a nice manner, may be blessed, as we say in the Orthodox Church. So I said, I will go and visit those two monasteries, and then I will inform you where I'm going to stay, because he said, I don't want to tell you, I don't want to order you where to stay, in which monastery, because you have to find out for yourself. He told me, go around and see. So wherever your heart tells you, this is the place for me, stay there and just inform me so I know where you are and of which monastery are you going to become a member. So we stayed for an hour or two, and when Father Abbott and Father Sava finished their duties and obligations with the bishop, we went back, and on our way back, we had already an opportunity to see one of those monasteries, which was on the halfway between Prizren and small town of Dečani, which was called Zočište, not far away from the village of Zočište, and not far away from the village of Velika Hoča. Zočište was mostly Albanian, and Velika Hoča was a pure Serbian village, pretty big one. I think at the time it was close to 3,000 people over there, and it was a very old habitation with many churches, very old churches from early centuries, from 10th, 11th, 12th century, with beautiful old icons. Later on, I would be able to examine all of them, very precious ones, very valuable ones. So when we went there, I saw a nice, kind of small monastery. The abbot was Father Ambrosia, very, very thin monk, very skinny monk, with a very quiet voice, and he was a real hesychast. That means the one who likes mental prayer and solitude and silence. There were a few more monks around him and novices, but somehow, I don't know what it was, somehow I didn't feel it's a place for me. So we stayed there for a while, we had a tea and we spoke a little bit, and then we left, and I was sure in myself. I didn't tell anything yet to Father Abbott Teodosia and Father Sava. So we went back to Dečani, and then they told me that there is another monastery which is straight across the border of Kosovo in the Serbian region, but right next to the borderline, which is called Black River, or Crna Reka in Serbian. And they told me this is the monastery, actually, where we all started our monastic life several years ago. The abbot of this monastery is our present Bishop Artemia. So when he came from theology studies from Athens, Greece, he was settled there, and he was told to be there by the church, and we all gathered around him over there. So it is a great holy place. It is a very unique in the world, you will see, Brother Alexander, because there is a cave church in the great stone hill. It is a mountain over there. It is very stony, and in one of those caves, the monks in the past dug out more caves, and there was a church. And it was one of those, like, early, from early centuries, Christian praying homes. And it was made in, let's say, 11th or 12th century. But then during the Turkish yoke, occupation of Ottoman Empire, it was a shelter for many generations of monks, because it was high in the mountains, covered by woods and these canyons. So it was a perfect place for prayer, solitude, silence, and for hiding from Turks, who were very, very dangerous. And they, of course, always wanted to convert all Christians into the Islam. And they were especially dangerous and ill-tempered against priests and monks. So through the whole history under the Turkish yoke, the history is filled up with martyrs, with killed and tortured priests and monks. So this place was full of this strong energy from all those past centuries, fighting to keep alive our faith, our nation, and our history. And I was ready to go there, but since the whole situation with traffic was very bad, and as I said before, the circulation of the buses was so bad that you never know where to take a bus and when. So I left my big bag and took a smaller one, just with the necessary laundry and some personal hygiene. And they gave me a ride to Dečani, to the village of Dečani. And then they drove me all the way to the Peć. Yes, they drove me all the way to the Peć, which was about 20 kilometers from Dečani. Peć was a little bit bigger town, and there was a regular bus station. So they told me, "Brother Alexander, now you're on your own. We cannot help you more because bus schedule is absolutely out of any order. And what you have to do is just wait and to ask for a bus which goes to Montenegro, and you will get off at the village of Ribarici, which means fishermen's." So to my surprise, I was very lucky, because very soon there was a bus who came, and he didn't lose much time, but there was also, to my surprise, enough seats over there for me. So I bought a ticket and found a place for me in the bus, and very soon we started our ride towards the village of Ribarici, which was right next to river Ibar. So we arrived after about, I think, 2 hours ride, and I got off at the appointed bus station. And I was told in Monastery of Dečani that the Monastery of Black River is up in the mountains, not very high, of course, about 1,000 meters altitude, but it is not very close to the village where I got off, and that I had to walk for about 10 kilometers, a little bit less than that, through the local villages, and then slowly I will start to climb up, to go up the hill, and then fortunately I will see the signs towards that lead to monastery. And they told me that I should be careful, because this area is absolutely Muslim area. There are no Serbs over there, and the monastery is in the mountains, but surrounded by Muslim population. At that time, still, there was no war, and there was no war, actually, in Serbia, but there was no war in Kosovo, and it was right next to the Kosovo border, and it was still peaceful, but it was not very good atmosphere at all. It was very tense, since there was a bloody war going on in Bosnia between Serbs, Croats and Muslims. But mostly closer to Serbia, the fights were among Serbs and Muslims. So it was a very great tension about the whole thing. And those Muslims here in Serbia, where I was, they were under great tension about everything which was going on. So it was never too safe. So they told me, just take care of yourself and open your eyes. Have your eyes wide open. Whatever it happens, do not respond to any provocations. Do not answer if anybody provokes you. So just be nice and polite to everybody. And, of course, I know that. Because if I remember my life back in New York City, maybe there was no war, but I used to live in Harlem, where there was, let's say, some kind of constant war. Because there were always shooting and killing and crazy things going on. So I was well educated how to act in the street. As they say, I was streetwise. So it was the same thing right now in this area of Muslim population. Of course, with Serbs, but a lot of Muslims. So I said, "Father Abbot, with your blessing I will go, and with your prayers I believe that nothing bad will happen to me." So when I got off, I took my little bag on my shoulder and asked local street walkers which way is Monastery of Black River and how to get there. So they told me where to go. So I had to cross a little bridge across the river, and there was actually an artificial lake made out of this river. So the area was very beautiful. And right next to the lake, the mountains were, growing up right from the banks of the river, and it was so majestic. Tall mountains, and down there beautiful, clean, green lake. So I set on my way, and as I was walking, I was praying all the time in my heart. And like from that first day when I discovered mental Jesus prayer, I was always delighted to be alone and to pray and to look around and to enjoy the whole environment, which was very rural and beautiful. Finally, the road was starting to get to go uphill, and now I entered the real mountain with tall, big trees, a lot of birds, with beautiful bird singing, and it was kind of fresher now because it was I entered the forest. So I was walking through the forest with tall, ancient trees with very thick and big trunks, and there was a small river which was entering the lake, and the road was leading right next to the river, and the river was full of cascades, and it was so clean and beautiful, running down joyfully, jumping all over the big stones with the green water grass. And finally, as the canyon was getting narrow and narrow, finally I have reached the peak of that canyon, the end of the canyon, and there was a monastery settled, the monastery of Black River. So when at last I entered through the monastery gate into the property of this holy place, I was so delighted to see something like from my dreams. It was surrounded all around by the mountains, the stone cliffs were all around with greenery, of course, with plants and with grass, bushes and different trees. The orchards were full of plums and pears and apples, and there was a garden also very well cultured. So everything was so domestic and so cozy, so nice. And there were a lot of monks at that time over there. I think, well, when I say a lot, just in terms of Serbia, because we in Serbia do not have that great number of monks like in Russia or in Romania or in Greece. But that was a pretty large monastery in number for our conditions. It was close to 20 of them, even more than in monastery of Dečani, which was much bigger monastery with big walls and big yard and really big church and buildings. But this was still very much attractive for the young a monastic longing soul. So there were 20 of them, and again I was accepted very nice, very warmly, and deep into my heart I have realized, in the same manner as something told me in the monastery of Zocište, this is not place for you. Here some secret voice told me, this is the place for you. Here you will stay for a good number of years in your life. And I was so happy. I was like in the paradise, seeing this protected and covered from the world monastic place. So then they showed me the main church, which was, as I said, built into the cliff. It was a large cave with a lot of smaller caves that they were monastic cells at a time in the past. At that time, monks didn't live in the cliff anymore, in the caves, but it was too harsh. It was too hard to live, very humid and cold. And I was always thinking, what kind of people were those monks in the past who were able, who managed to live there for years? They must have been some kind of superman, a spiritual giants, with such a strong prayer and, of course, strong physical health to be able to live there and survive. Of course, during this summer that I was there, it was the end of September, but very warm. It was nice and warm, even in the cave, although you could feel humidity and coldness. Everything was so cool inside. But during the winter and fall, with a lot of rain and low temperature, it was pretty hard to survive there, to continue to live there. So I was so delighted to see. It was so mystical. It was extremely mystical. I never saw something like this in my life. And there was right there was this river that I saw in the foot of the mountain, a small river that was entering the lake. But to my surprise, the riverbed was there dry. And they told me how it happened, that the river let's say close to a kilometer upper there in the mountain, is entering the ground, going down and going under the ground all the way through the monastery and getting out again in its regular riverbed, maybe again a kilometer lower down. So it means that it was very quiet in the monastery, because otherwise it would be extremely noisy. Because later on I saw when there are big rains, especially, or melting of the snow in the spring or in the fall, when there was a lot of rain and melted snow, the river, this underground waterbed, cannot hold the whole quantity of the water, and then the river flows through above the ground through the regular waterbed, and then it's very noisy over there as the river hits all those stones on its way down to the lake. And they told me the story how this river was given name Black River, because in the past, in the medieval age, there was a hermit, Ioannikie was his name. He used to live in this cave, and he was a hermit living there all alone by himself, and he was mostly praying through the whole day. Sometimes he would just work a little bit, making ropes or baskets, something like this, to sell and maybe to get some little food for him. Or he didn't even go out of the cave sometimes for several months, eating just maybe little pieces of dry bread and some water. He was a real hermit, like in the early centuries, like a desert fathers from Egypt and Syria and Palestine. And once he was so annoyed by the noise of the river, and he said, "Be quiet, hush, you black river." And at that moment, the river stopped flowing there. And this is how it received this name, Black River. So really, the river didn't flow through the monastery, but from big part of its waterbed, it was under the ground. And it was nice and quiet in the monastery. And there was, because the cave, the church cave, was in the cliff, which was just above this river, the riverbed, and across this river, dry river, was a wooden bridge, small bridge, maybe something like 8 meters long, very nice. And through this bridge, there was an entrance into the cave. So it was so beautiful. Then I entered the cave, and there were stairs and corridors through the inner part of this cliff of the cave. And it was so beautiful inside, so spiritual, so mystical, like some other world. Then finally, we were walking besides monastic cells, of course, which were not active at that time. But there was a bigger one, which was a confession room. There was Abbot Nikolai, who was confessing in this room. And finally, we entered kind of wider space. There was those stalactites and stalagmites made out of, for many years, dropping down the water and building up these beautiful lime forms made out of limestone. And then there was a church built up in the cave. Small, beautiful church, completely painted with frescoes inside. And the walls were uneven, of course. It was just one part of the cave was built up, but all other four parts, walls, were natural, made out of stone, and they were very curved, but smooth. And they were all painted with very old frescoes from, I think, 16th or 15th century. Already pretty darkened, but very beautiful. There was an icon screen with icons from 16th century, from a very famous Serbian icon painter called Longin. And the most precious article, if I can say it this way, in the church was a holy relics, a coffin, a small sarcophagus, a coffin with the holy relics of Saint Peter of Korisha. This was another holy hermit who used to live in the area closer to prison, city of prison, but he never lived in Black River, but he was a holy man even during his life, and when he died, his body stayed incorrupt, like many other holy relics that we have in our Orthodox Church. And when they were fleeing from the Turks, monks took his holy relics and brought them into this very well hidden monastery of Black River, and they put them into this cave church. So from that time on, those holy relics were there, and they were giving a lot of healings. A lot of people would come there, pray about the holy relics, and they would receive by their faith the recoveries of their illnesses and weaknesses. So I put my head down on the wooden box with holy relics, and I prayed with all my heart, God, by the prayers of Holy Peter of Koresha, help me to stay here, help me to become a member of this small mountain spiritual monastic flock. Help me to become one of them, and help me, you, great hermit Peter, to become your child in this home of yours. So finally I was there, I introduced myself again to the abbot, and he told me, Brother Alexander, welcome, stay with us. So I stayed there, and about my stay in the monastery of Black River, I will tell you in our next meeting. Goodbye and rejoice.
Thank you for listening Radio Svetigora, the radio station of the Serbian Orthodox Church, Diocese of Montenegro and the Seaside. Blessed by His High Eminence, Metropolitan Amfilohije.